I'm very happy to welcome back to the program Tomás Hinos. He is the founding director of Milagro Herbs, and he's an instructor at Milagro School of Herbal Medicine. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks. Thanks for having me back.
It's a long time since you've been on the air.
We just decided pre-2007.
Yeah, because that's when I started archiving the show. But you have been doing this for decades now, studying and teaching herbal medicine.
Right.
And herbal medicine is, for many people, an alternative to prescription medicine, and for many people, a way of preventing diseases that you might have to treat with prescription medicine.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's one kind of niche, if you will. It's actually the foundation, of course, of all modern medicine was the study of plants and the therapeutics around that. Actually, about 25% still of pharmaceutical medicines are derived initially from a plant-based material and then synthesized into a pharmaceutical drug. So it still has a large impact in modern medicine. But on the whole, it's, again, holistically based. And so a lot of folks come in that are just maintaining health, maintaining good health, and also herbal medicine's quite effective on chronic illnesses.
Like what?
Well, like chronic allergies. They tend to recur, whereas a lot of over-the-counter medications or pharmaceutical drugs tend to maybe have some undesirable side effects, whereas herbal medicines work very well with that. And not only that, but we work with the whole person. And so it's not just about necessarily a disease or an ailment. It's more about what's the whole person, what's the root cause, and what are perhaps the contributing factors, and how can we work with that.
Now, in acupuncture, oriental medicine, and in Ayurvedic medicine, there are ways of looking at the whole person that have to do with the four elements or the five elements or the different temperaments or whatever. In the kind of herbal medicine that you do, are there, for example, different body types that you would treat with different kinds of herbs?
Well, exactly, yeah. Actually, herbalism is, of course, a worldwide trade, one of the first needs of human beings. So our approach in Western herbalism, let's say from a European standpoint, the root was we go back all the way into Greece and Egypt. And there were four humors, if you will, or four types of persons and also ailments. So we work with the constitution of the person, what is their makeup, and then trying to keep that person within balance. We also incorporate a lot of the ideas and concepts in with the Ayurvedic, Chinese, and Mexican herbalism. So we have curanderas that are coming up and teaching with our program. And a lot of it, all the those herbal trades are holistically based that include the four directions or five directions and the five tastes and all the things that you find in other traditions are actually in our background, in our European history, but they've been kind of pushed to the back or lost over time, but we're recovering them, and this is how we do it through this training programs.
There are so many ways of thinking and doing things. I mean, agriculture, for example, was co-invented in a lot of different places at the same time. It's not like it started somewhere and spread all over the world. And I would think that all the different traditions on every continent have discovered a lot of the same things about similar plants independently of one another.
Exactly. And that's where a lot of the sharing needs to go happens, where we do a lot of course, sharing over the internet, but also at conferencing and sharing and co-teaching so that we find out the commonalities. But there's also another interesting part to it where I've spent a lot of time in Mexico studying with herbal traditions there. And of course, we have this border area between the United States and Mexico. So that's a political boundary, but actually the ecologies are shared in a lot of ways. And so a lot of the plants that are growing in Mexico that also grow in New Mexico, for example, and it might be the same plant growing in both countries, and the uses may be totally different, or they could be the same. But if they're different, then that's kind of interesting, because then there's a whole new set of uses that, for example, they've been using in Mexico that we could learn from and maybe apply
right.
where we didn't know about before. So there's a lot of sharing that is very important. And the same with Chinese medicine. We have a very similar plants to what are used in Chinese medicine, or the same, and they might have totally different uses and concepts around the uses. So sharing is really important as far as the information goes.
That is very interesting. I remember years ago reading a book by an ethnobotanist who went to the Amazon rainforest, and there were different tribes that lived fairly near each other but weren't on particularly good terms, and he got their medicine people to talk to each other and to see how they use different leaves and different plants. And even people living right next door to each other would use the same plant for two different things.
Yeah, that's very common. You'll find that all over the world. And a lot of times just the separations in political boundaries or social boundaries create separations in knowledge base. And even to the point where you'll find different healers, using a similar plant or the same plant in different ways.
Right.
So even herbalists in the United States may use, for example, marshmallow root, which is a very common plant, in two different ways. And that might be a preference of theirs, or it might be that something over time that they've learned that just works for them. So there's a lot of variation. We kind of have a common system, but we apply it differently.
Now, you are about to start an 8-month-long course of study for people who want to get more deeply into herbal medicine.
Exactly. And so part of that reason is that there hasn't been an herb school here in Santa Fe for quite a long time. And there's a big need for students, younger people, to get into the trade and get training, because it takes so many years to get the training and to apply it and get experience. And so the demand has been increasing over the years. We've been doing, for the past 2 years at Milagro Herbs, we've been doing 1-day workshops, 2-day workshops, and so building the capacity and also the interest level. So we've got a lot of students that are interested in going into it as perhaps a career. And since it's holistic and there's so much information to know, we're starting this first year as a foundation course to future study as well.
If you go into herbal medicine as a career, do you have to jump through bureaucratic hoops? Is there kind of certification?
We give a certificate at the end of our training, but there's no formal certification for herbalists. As far as the bureaucracies, authorities, or governments are concerned, their interest is regulating both plants, depending on if something's unsafe or something to be aware of. So they've looked at actual plants, and they also govern the production process. So like clean laboratory techniques, for example, just like you might use in a restaurant, for example, just keep things clean.
Sterilize your bottles.
Right, that kind of thing. Keep things clean and keep records of how things are produced and when they're produced. But as far as the actual individuals, at this point, we have no certification. But we have seen over time what is needed, and what, as far as a training goes, what, according to what a herbalist does, what are the fields that need to be used in that training. So we use botany, of course, which is the identification of plants. We work a lot with agriculture as well, because a herbalist usually wants to grow some of their own medicines to work with. We look at materia medica, which is a study of many different plants, and pharmacy, how to make things.
Yeah.
And then therapeutics, how to apply the knowledge to people.
And there is a dimension of empowerment in it, because if you can grow your own herbs and make your own herbs, you don't have to be utterly dependent on a system that might be out of your price range or that is hard to understand or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. And so it's maybe just even for health maintenance. And so actually a lot of our students come to learn for their own health, and then also to help people around them, like their families, their community. They're not necessarily interested in going into it as a trade or a business, but it goes along well with, for example, we have a massage therapist come and study, and they might want to apply the information along with their other massage trade or acupuncturist or any number of folks. Primarily a lot of outdoorsy types that like to get their hands in the dirt, you know, and actually, you know, see what the plants look like, go out in the field. And it's a lot of fun because we spend time out camping in the field and looking at native plants, for example.
And there's a lot of native plants that are really therapeutic and can be used in so many different ways. There's a plant that grows out of the cracks between the sidewalk in front of my house that if you make a salve out of it, it makes mosquito bites stop itching.
Uh-huh.
It's just an ugly weed.
Yeah, they're everywhere. Yeah, we work with over 200 different local plants as far as, and on a field trip, a lot of times we'll see 50 plants just in a weekend and talk about the uses for those plants. And then when you include those individual plants and start mixing them with others, you get exponential uses. And so, the native plants are here to be used, and the history, if you figure in all the years of the Pueblo cultures and the Hispanic cultures that have been here, the historical uses and applications are, it's quite a rich information base.
How has herbal medicine helped your own life, if it has? Do you use herbs yourself a lot?
All the time, you know, every day, and if nothing, most of the time I feel really good, but after dinner I have a cup of mint tea and to help with the digestion, and a lot of times in the morning I'll have an herbal tea base and during the day something to drink, and it helps replenish electrolytes and just kind of keep things in balance. And also with our approach to staying healthy with the seasons, which is really critical, if you use herbal teas or medicines according to the seasonal approach, you can avoid some of the common ailments like allergies or cold and flu.
How do you avoid cold and flu?
Well, keep your immune system really healthy and strong. And so in the fall, beginning in about September, really boost your immune system and also protect the throat and lungs.
What kind of herbs are good for that, just for example?
Our primary herb is osha, and that's has thousands of years of use in this area. All the local folks know that plant, and it grows way up high in the mountains. And there actually is a similar plant used in Chinese medicine that grows in China to that plant. So, but it's very good at protecting the lungs and purifying the lungs. So, for example, I have a couple pieces in my pocket right now. So if I'm ever feeling like a little tickle in my throat, or like I've been exposed to someone or someone's coughing nearby, and I'll start chewing on a piece of it, and it keeps my breath fresh and keeps the bugs from sinking in.
Very interesting.
Yeah, it's a fantastic plant, and lots of years of use here. So that's, in the fall we use osha, and throughout the winter just keep it around. We make preparations with honey, we make preparations with extracts with tinctures of alcohol and water, or just the raw root.
We're talking to Tomas Inos of Milagro Herbs. Now, what about some of the ailments of old age, like arthritis and the kind of stiffness that people get in their joints as they get older? Are there herbs that can either prevent or treat that kind of thing?
Well, there are a number of them. First of all, we look at what's the lifestyle of the person, because arthritis a lot of times might be what we consider to be where the person is too acidic, so they end up with uric acid buildup in the joints, and then there's swelling, inflammation, and pain. And so we look at helping to balance the person, become more alkaline, maybe taking herbs like alfalfa in their diet to alkalize the body. Burdock, dandelion root, for example, are very effective. And then perhaps an anti-inflammatory herb, like a great local plant for that, is yerba mansa or yerba del manzo. It's a local root that grows along the waterways. It's very effective for all kinds of inflammation. So we might do a combination of people and then help them understand how they can modify their lifestyle to avoid the the problems, or to at least mitigate the heavy impact of pain and swelling.
Do you work also with people in terms of not just herbs, but the diet that they're eating?
Yes, that's very critical, is looking at the diet, and stress level, of course, is a big one, lifestyle, things like even digestive issues are the biggest issues worldwide that herbalists deal with. So upset digestion, all these things called acid reflux that people have. So what's the stress level? Like, what are people thinking or watching, or how are they eating? Are they eating really fast? Or are they drinking cold, ice-cold drinks with their meal that might impair digestion? So there are a lot of questions we need to uncover. It's kind of a little bit of a individual detective work.
Yeah.
And asking questions and then making suggestions and try and fine-tune that. And then with that in mind, then the herbs can work better.
It's funny because, I mean, life is stressful. You
always
can't have a non-stressful life unless you're very, very lucky. And I don't even know if you want to call it lucky, because it might be boring if you had a completely non-stressful life. But it's also true that we choose some stressful situations. And when you become aware of that, like I noticed the other day, I was watching a television program that was so gripping and scary. Mm. And at the end, I was like, you know what? I'm not going to do that again. It's too scary. This is too much stress on my body. I'm just going to stop.
Yeah. Well, nowadays it's more, there's so much stress, we need to pick and choose.
Yeah.
You know, some of it's beneficial. Like a lot of times we need a deadline, right, to actually come up with the work, you know, at the deadline. Or, you know, fight or flight kind of thing. When our adrenaline kicks in, that's a common. But when we're under adrenaline stress day in and day out, that just wears down the body. And then we end up, the person usually ends up crashing, and then you have to kind of rebuild them. And I've been through that myself. I did it at a younger age when I was in my 20s. So I'm well aware of that. And
you crashed and burned and came back?
27, yeah. That was a great year.
Really?
Yeah, I did it all.
What happened?
Everything, you know. I did everything that I possibly could have done to enhance my lively experience, and I just crashed, and things just fell apart for me. And I thought I was invulnerable, you know, in my late 20s. And
is that how you got into herbalism?
That's one of the ways that one of the things that helped me get on the path. Very much like I couldn't avoid it anymore. Like, this is it. I was going to either die or get it together. And so I thought, well, this is great. I kind of come from this background. My mother did a lot of vegetable growing and teaching me what she knew about plants when I was young. So it kind of comes natural. I'd rather be healthy than to go through a lot of pain and suffering. And so it's kind of relinquishing our attachment to pain and suffering, if you will, you know, like instead of beating ourselves over the head all the times through too much stress or poor quality food or excess drug intake, recreational drug or whatever it might be that just wears us down. You know, too much friction. It's like driving down the street, one foot on the gas pedal, the other on the brakes.
When you talk about the practices that you do, they seem so simple. You drink your mint tea after dinner. You slow down a little bit. You chew your OSHA root that you keep in your pocket. It's stuff that really doesn't seem like that's going to change your life, but taken together, perhaps it does.
Yeah, and it should be simple at some level. Mint tea is very effective. It's amazingly good, and helps us sleep at night. If your digestion is good after your evening meal and it's calm, you have a good night's sleep. So how many people do you know, perhaps yourself? I've had it occasionally where you wake up in the middle of the night all the time. Can't get a good night's sleep. Try doing that for a couple months and you really get worn down. And so having good digestion, one of the primary causes of sleeplessness and recurrent wakefulness in the middle of the night is from poor digestion. It's liver gallbladder, if you will. And that's so we work with that just by calming the digestion, not eating too late, but calming it through a cup of mint tea. It makes all the world of difference, and it's so simple. But you know, we don't hear a lot about that. So
right. Now the course of 8 months course of herbal medicine is starting very soon. And if people want to find out more, well, when is it starting? This spring?
April 2nd is the first day. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's people have a while to register or whatever.
I thought I'd get out now. People are thinking about new things. You know, we're coming into spring. The daylight hours are lengthening, and people think, well, what do I want to do this spring? Something really great and new. So, they can contact us with at info@milagroherbs.com or just call us here in Santa Fe, 820-6321, and we have all the information packet, and we can explain it to folks. Our first class will be limited to 12 people, and so we're really excited about that, and we've got a lot of information to put out for folks.
Tomas Enos is with Milagro Herbs. They're also on the web at milagroherbs.com. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. Thank you.